After the Housing Act of 1949, Boston City Hall embarked on its last big push for family, project-style housing. The 648-unit Commonwealth Project, also known as Fidelis Way, in Brighton was built in 1951. Voices of Fidelis Way tenants Denise Lydon, Rita Reardon, and Keith Willits.
I don't know, I always say if I had to do it all over again, I wouldn't change one bit of it. I think I am the person I am because of Fidelis, growing up in public housing. That's why I am who I don't know. I'm happy.
Yeah.
I'm happy that I grew up there. We didn't know that we didn't have anything.
Right. We really didn't.
You know,
we all had our basic needs met.
Even though our parents had a tab at the ice cream man for like the popsicles were 5 cents and the fudgicles were 7 cents, but we had a lot of things that just made us happy.
Yeah.
You know, we had, I called them summer teachers. They would come every summer and they would bring the games, you know, the balls, the whole thing. And we had that all summer long.
Dorchester's Columbia Point, the largest public housing project in New England, was built in 1954. Voices of former Columbia Point tenants, Angie Irving and Charlie Titus.
It had church, Catholic kids, had the St. Christopher's, and the Protestant kids kind of went to church either outside the projects, or there was religious communities within the projects. After school programs and summer programs and movies and things like that, all things that all young people like to be a part of as they're growing up and to feel like they're part of the community.
During the late 1950s, tenants in public housing began to organize into new unions and associations. Columbia Point in particular was a hotbed of organizing, starting with major protests to close the city dump next door.
You know, I remember riding my bike up and down Mount Vernon Street.
When you go into Columbia Point, there's only one way in, one way out, Mount Vernon, straight in. At the very end of the projects was this big, what we used to call a castle. And it was also a dumping ground. So these big, huge dump trucks used to come through our community regularly and dump whatever.
The dump trucks used to fly up and down Mount Vernon Street. I mean, it was like it was a speedway, and the parents were always complaining about it. Once the little girl actually got hit by one of those trucks, they formed a barrier in front of the entrance to the dump. It was actually mothers for Columbia Point who did it. They were out there serving coffee, they had donuts, but there were no trucks going into that dump. They shut it down.
I remember feeling so proud standing. My mother was pushing a carriage, maybe a little brother or sister, and I had my little coat on, and we're all walking around in a circle stopping these big-ass dump trucks from moving. We effectively halted them. It was like organizing 101.
From 1963 to the early 1970s, there was a flurry of tenant activism across Boston in a period of great political activity in the city.
My brothers and a sister were very much involved with the Black Panther Party. They were running all kinds of activities and education programs. At the time, it was around the Vietnam War. And a lot of our young men were going to war, dying, or coming back with all kinds of issues, including alcoholism and drugs and all that sort of stuff. They were not the same people. But I ran the breakfast program. And at the same time, we were educating our young people and families about the issues of Vietnam War, the atrocities that were going on, and then how it all mirrored what was going on in Columbia Point.
By the late 1960s, there were significant demographic shifts in the population living in Columbia Point. It became a population with a high percentage of deeply impoverished people who were not employed. It also became more segregated by race. Columbia Point residents also experienced extreme harassment during the Boston busing crisis from 1974 to 1976. Many white and lower middle class tenants who could afford a different apartment or house simply left. By 1979, the project was mostly vacant. Only 350 families remained in a project that was built with 1,500 apartments.
You know, the real deterioration of the Point took place when I was not there. By the time I got back and saw the place, it was like, man, I don't even believe it's the same place. And to me, that had to be intentional. I mean, I think that the Boston Housing Authority just let it go. They just let it go. They clearly just stopped taking care of the place. They clearly, when people moved out, did not put people in those apartments. in Old Harbor and Mary Ellen McCormick, you had white families, Irish families, who were connected to the politicians who were running the city. And so they could make a call and get a fence fixed. They could make a call and get a door fixed. But the people who lived in Columbia Point didn't have that same access.
I don't know when Boston Housing decided not to care anymore, but they did. And I don't know if it's because they didn't hire as many maintenance men. Everybody had to wash those stairs, and they had, every month, let's say, you know, January was your month, you take care of the hall. Yep. I remember my mother out there waxing those floors.
Washing those floors, those cement floors. I mean, ridiculous.
Yeah, and you had to keep that hallway clean.
Yeah.
There were three apartments occupied, and the rest were all open and abandoned. This is in 1981. And those floors were now disgusting, and the stairwell that went down to the cellars that we used to love to hang around with, well, that would have been filled up probably to the top stair of garbage. They just stopped fixing things. When I moved out, we had no hot water. Just to hold the sink, my mother had to put a full gallon of water on top of the faucet so it didn't spray out. She had to put something, because they weren't coming in fixing anything. I think then they did stop using the incinerators and put dumpsters out there, which were faithfully lit on fire every single night by a tenant, just for fun.
In 1979, after touring public housing sites with deplorable conditions, Judge Paul Garrity ordered the Boston Housing Authority into receivership. Harry Spence was appointed as receiver. Voice of Stephen Tice, the architect of the Commonwealth redevelopment.
The number one guiding principle in reprogramming and redesigning the site was to make a very clear distinction between private space, semi-private space, public space. The site was wide open, so anything that was common or used collectively was essentially out of control. The doors were always wide open, there was no security. In the low-rise buildings, we were successful in eliminating all of the public stairwells. We gutted them and converted them into townhouses, so that there were private front doors and private back doors. We introduced a new road system, which allowed for much easier vehicular access. The reason that I think our design was chosen in the end is that we supplemented our renovation with some new construction extensions to the buildings, which allowed us to demolish more existing buildings. What we did in Boston had national repercussion. Congress authorized a study nationally of distressed public housing. Huge study. And some of the people on our team were cherry-picked to be on that team. And the outcome of the national study was this prototypical program called Hope Six. And Commonwealth was the project that was referenced by the National Commission over and over and over again. I mean, at one point, you couldn't get into Commonwealth because of the number of tour buses that were taking people through the development to show them how this can be successful.
After redevelopment, the Commonwealth Project, or Fidelis Way, remained 100% public housing. Columbia Point, however, was redeveloped into a private complex called Harbor Point. Many of the former Columbia Point residents, at least 19% according to the developer, were evicted after redevelopment.
We were victimized by a lot of different things, but the people I grew up with, my friends, were all very proud to be of Columbia Point. That's our education. That was our learning ground. That's our foundation. So, and I think Columbia Point gave me that foundation for fighting for what I believe in. And you'll find that's a common thing among people who are Columbia Pointers.